For sure.
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 Welcome to another episode of For Sure, a 200-foot podcast. I'm Peter.
I'm Jay.
All right, and we're coming at you shortly after the new year. You'll be hearing this episode on January 8th. And pretty recently, we had the Winter Classic. And so we're going to talk about the Winter Classic for as long as I watch the Winter Classic this year. Our second topic, no, I'm just kidding.
Oh, Peter.
Although, I will be serious, I did not watch the Winter Classic. I did not care about the Winter Classic. I'm not sure if that says more about me or the Winter Classic. I think I know what I'd pick. But, Jay, all right, so what are your thoughts about this? First of all, did you care? And if so, why?
Well, I am burdened with glorious purpose of being a entry level optimist when it comes to outdoor games, because while I agree that they are really high in number and I think they are being executed in increasingly poorer ways, I still enjoy the idea of seeing these teams battle it outside in the elements. It's now a 4 year now long running debate about like how many do we have, how many should we have. I think now that it's been 10 years, I think maybe every other year could give it some fire back. But this year I watched it. I woke up. I mean, you know, I didn't catch the opening, but you know, I'd also heard that they were going to announce the Olympic rosters. Which, you know, we'll talk a little bit about Olympics a little later on in the episode. But for that aspect, I thought it was neat to maybe watch and tune in. But I was watching it before, and I was watching it before. In terms of watching this game, like I've seen this before. What else do I need? And it was the Rangers. And the friggin' Buffalo Sabres. And this was really exciting, Pete, because we actually talked about it in a couple episodes ago, because they actually had probably some of the nicer unis that had been released for Winter Classic. So I think that had it going for it. But I still contend that baseball stadiums are not the venues to hold these things at. You got to have 360 to 360 degree view angle. You just have to. It's too much. And again, the prices are ridiculous, and you know, sometimes the weather isn't the greatest and whatnot. So I think as an entry level observer, it was neat. But like the second you start to think about it more, you're like, wait a minute. Okay, let's talk about some things. So I share your demonstrable ignorance, not ignorance, your willful apathy. How about that?
Sure, yeah.
you were totally Batman at the end of Batman Begins. I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. so that's I share your viewpoint a little bit in that regard. So
yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it for me is like burnout. Like the outdoor game idea was definitely really cool when it first started. I remember, you know, if you go back to the beginning, I mean, I would watch pretty much every outdoor game they were throwing at me. And by doing that, it was great because I got to really increase the number of the times that I got to see the Chicago Blackhawks play each year. So that, you know, I had like a little side bonus, you know, I can, you know, update my Blackhawks references. But I mean, like, to call this the Winter Classic, it kind of reminds me of the Mitch Hedberg bit where he talks about how he was watching ESPN Classic, and it was like an old baseball game. It's like, and then the guy fouled off the ball. Classic, you know, like I mean, it kind of it's kind of lost the appeal that it once had. And I think part of it is most of your fans, unless their team is involved, are not going to really care that much. I think that's one of the biggest issues I think you have is, you know, I know that if I don't really care about the teams playing at this point, I don't really care about watching. I used to watch it no matter who was playing. But now, like, I don't really care that much. Like, when it was Detroit and Toronto, that was fun. I did enjoy that game. You know, that was that had a good, exciting ending. It was definitely a good hockey game. I don't know. I think, like I said, I think it's kind of lost its appeal. It's hard. I mean, it almost seems like it's really cool for the players, or at least some of them. It's really cool for the people that are there that can actually see, I guess. So that's, you know, a portion of the people that are there. But on television, you know, it doesn't really look as good. Like, I know this is a different thing, but at the World Junior Championships, they had the U.S. and Canada played. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I'll watch it. And I had to turn it off because I could not. Like, the camera angle was so low that the ice looked tiny, and I couldn't, like, you couldn't follow the puck, you know, because it was just too hard to kind of see the action that was going on. So, like I said, I think for me, I think it's just oversaturation. I think, Gary Bettman strapped on the wax wings of the outdoor game, and I think he flew too close to the sun. And I think right now the NHL is currently plumbing back to earth in terms of interest for these games.
That's kind of a low blow to Icarus, because at least Icarus had ambition and wants to shoot for the sun and actually had the ingenuity to do it, whereas Batman had to negotiate someone else to put on the wings. And then, oh, if they got close, he would have taken credit. But then they crashed. He's like, oh, that's totally their fault. But that's neither here nor there. If I wanted to pin one major factor on killing it, the stadium series. I think that was just too much too fast. It was, hey, kid, you know, welcome to college. It's freshman year. Everything's exciting. You're going to gain that 15 pounds. You're going to figure out what you want to do with your life. And then they got into sophomore year. It's like, choose your life now. Choose it well. Choose or be perished. Right? Like, I don't know. I still think the venue kind of lent it a little bit more magic to it. Like, Fenway Park and Wrigley Field, I think were like the only two baseball stadiums that kind of warranted the ability to have them played there because of their historical significance. But, like, when you're playing at, like, Coors Field or Nats Park, you know, like, just these aren't storied buildings, and they aren't pretty to look at. They're just cookie-cutter stadiums. Like, there's, yeah, they have their quirks that make them their own, and, you know, I get that. And, you know, hey, baseball fans, you can at me later. But I sincerely think that the NHL screwed up when they stopped coming up with creative, like, storylines for the Classic itself. And, I think they were maybe relying on just like, it's an outdoor game. It doesn't matter what we do. They're going to love it. But now we're 10 years on, and now it's time to put this thing under the microscope and be like, okay, what works? What doesn't? I think one outdoor game a year would be great after we take a break. Hmm. Like, let's take a 2-year moratorium. You know, let's find ourselves in the wilderness and then come back fresh with some neat ideas. You know, they already announced that, what, I think the 2019 one is going to be at Notre Dame Stadium.
Yes.
Between the Bruins and the Blackhawks. That storied Hawks-Bruins championship rivalry runs deep in the heart of Indiana, I guess. So
I'm really glad that after all this time, the seventh greatest captain in NHL history, according to NHL Network, is going to, you know, finally get a chance to lead his team out of the tunnel, yeah, and down the 85,000 foot runway to the rink.
Good. Yeah, it is really tough to try and see how do they maximize, because, like, you want it to be an event, you want to maximize your revenue, but then you also have to have a location that is fantastic enough to, like, warrant interest. But, you know, like, look at the Heritage Classic thing, the Centennial Classic that happened up in Ottawa, right? Like, they built the rink and they built those makeshift stands. You know, obviously the NHL wants something like a upwards of 30,000 type attendance event to grab some cashish, which is fine. But, you know, I think moving forward, you know, like let's get creative with where we're playing these things. You know, I think there's, and this happens to be where I think television crews need to step it up a little bit, because if they are going to go in these storied places, that means they're not going to be able to get enough people, at least revenue wise, to get there. And now you have to think about, like, okay, so now we're going to have these awesome venues. How do we bring it to everyone who can't go? And I think that's, and I think that's still a problem regardless right now. I think, you know, not even for Winter Classic. I think across the board, I think maybe, and I hate to say this because I just hate the sport with a passion, but I think football is actually kind of maybe tapping into something by actually having the Skycam be the actual game cam view. Like, you know, the way everybody plays Madden, you know, you're always doing from behind the QB. So, you know, I think there are innovations to be made. I think having some rail cams for the outdoor games, I think having, you know, like, don't like have the guys call the game from in the stands with players, right? Like if you're going to be at these baseball stadiums, you know, instead of having the guys in the press box, hey, set up the space heaters, man. Call it from within. You know, I realize that they're not like calling them from a bunker because it's cold, but you know, like be amongst the people, show the people there, show the fandom, do all that stuff. So, you know, Winter Classic, short of having a mechanized T-Rex bite giant cars in half, or you know, I don't know, maybe having Wayne Gretzky reenact his greatest moments. You know, like it's time to maybe take a break. Let's ease off the gas. I mean, believe me, I'd love for you to be every year still, if only the excuse to try and come up with different and cool jerseys, because I'm a jersey fanatic. But you know, I think for the betterment of the sport, and I think for the betterment of what you want that event to mean, it's time to hit pause. So.
Yeah, so speaking of NHL institutions that could use a little bit of a rejuvenation, we have the All-Star Game coming up at the end of the month, and the NHL has announced several things. First of all, they have announced the captains of each team, and we have no idea how many votes each of these players received or how many votes other players in their division received. But we have to rely on the NHL to tell us that these are the four captains. And if you follow hockey Twitter, then you probably didn't even know that they had announced the captains, because hockey Twitter was ablaze for at least a full day about the other announcement, which was the jerseys. All right, so we're going to come back to those in just a second. But first the captains. So your four captains, they're not really, I mean, there's no surprise in here. Certainly there are other players who could have been chosen, but I don't think it's like looking at this list, you're like, oh my God, how the heck did that person get chosen? So we have from the Atlantic, we have Steven Stamkos. From the Metro, we have Alex Ovechkin. From the Pacific, we have Connor McDavid. And then from the Central, we have PK Subban. And as of right now, we don't know who the other players are on the teams. So out of those four, like, not that I'm saying that they don't deserve it, but do you think anybody got snubbed in particular? Like, is there like one standout player that you're like, oh, that player should have been named over one of these four?
Yeah. And I think the universe is going to agree with me on this. When it comes to talent and bringing your team together, I think the snubbing of Luke Gritkowski is egregious on purpose, and quite frankly, a shot over the bow that is the good ship Red Wing and the hockey community itself. So that was their first big mistake. I don't know. I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't just find another excuse to land Crosby in there. That's kind of nice. So maybe that's kind of neat. I mean, this is a problem I have with a lot of people, because like they get upset when I say this, which is a very funny way to put this. If you're talking about Ovechkin versus a bunch of other people, or if you're talking about Crosby versus a bunch of other people, most of the time you'll be like, yeah, I'd probably take Crosby. Or, yeah, I'd probably take Ovechkin over that. But head to head, Crosby versus Ovechkin, I pick Ovechkin every time, just because I think his explosive skill is far more earned than Crosby's, because he was just basically anointed this thing where it's like, yes, he has the skills and he followed up with it, but like he was just unilaterally chosen. Like, you could have done that with Ovechkin. You could have done it with anybody else, but because he's a good old Canadian boy and he does all the good things right, you know, But yeah, I don't know. I mean, from the, you know, Connor McDavid, I mean, who else is doing great out in the West?
Well, I mean, taking a look at NHL.com at the point totals, there is nobody ahead of Connor McDavid in points. Johnny Gaudreau from Calgary is one behind him. So, yeah, Connor McDavid is the leading point scorer in the Pacific.
So between Johnny Hockey and Connor McDavid, you know, there's your two right there. I mean, for the Central, I think Subban's a solid pick. I like Subban. He's an enigmatic guy. He's certainly at the forefront of all of our hearts and minds right now, because he did another one of his awesome, I will disguise myself as a completely different person and go do fun stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about Stamkos in there. I realize that they're, you know, number one in the Atlantic and whatnot, but you know, it's just, I don't know. I don't know if Stamkos is the face of the Atlantic. You know, I'm kind of surprised they didn't just try to shoehorn Austin Matthews or something in there, you know? So yeah, captains wise, I'm okay. I mean, like I said, they took Ovechkin over Crosby. That's funny. So that's amusing to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was looking, and the interesting thing is that if you look at points, there's a bunch of people there's a bunch of people in the Metro that have more points than Ovechkin does. You got Claude Giroux, got John Tavares, Josh Bailey, Voracek, Phil Kessel, and then you got Ovechkin. But Ovechkin is tied for the league lead in goals. So I think there's definitely, you know, some good, you know, definitely like a good reason to pick him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in the only one I would probably choose differently would be, again, in the Atlantic, I would go with Kucherov. He has, he's leading the league in goals along, like I said, with Ovechkin with 26, and he has 58 points, which is 8 more than Steven Stamkos. So again, I'm not saying I think like, oh my God, Stamkos is a fraud, I can't believe they picked him. But
yeah,
I do think if I had, if I could change one thing, I think that would be it. But I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. But Jay, let's talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about these jerseys, because I don't really care as much about jerseys as you do, or as apparently a lot of hockey Twitter does. I mean, every year when jerseys like this come out, I don't really care. I'm like, what, you know, it's for one game. Doesn't really matter to me. But as somebody who does care about this, what did you think? What's your take on this?
First of all, hockey listeners, allow me to describe to you the facial expressions that glanced and graced Peter's face just now. It was like, it was like a dad being forced to talk about every time he had to go into school because his kid kept spitting on another kid. Just like hand on the forehead, like, yeah, he did it again. And I've been trying to tell him not to do it. And I just don't care anymore. That's fun. But anyways, yes, as the resident jersey fiend, I think these are pretty close to being actually good in terms of one-offs for an All-Star game. I mean, it's kind of interesting to look back across the designs across the spectrum of the NHL and see the parts where they peaked and the other areas where they could excel at. And I don't know, some of the classic Wales and Campbell jerseys from the mid 80s. I really like those. I mean, it's really tough to do something with black and silver every time. That's why I miss the Shield being black and orange, because at least you have a little bit of flair for it. But if you were doing that now, it would basically be like, oh, everybody's a Ducks fan. The league is a Duck fan, you know, da, da, da. But I'm actually pretty okay with these. I actually like, again, the color schemes I'm okay with. It's just about how they're laid out. And it's a little weird to, you know, be all that mad about it, because like you said, it's one game and there's no reason to even be like that mad about it in the first place. But I will say that in terms of what this year has to offer, especially since it's now, you know, the Adidas has taken over and everything, I I am even JJ and I were, I kind of had to tweet at him like, hey, I am Jersey Spartacus. I like these two. I like the, just the way the colors are laid out on the sleeves, and just the thing that annoyed me most with these jerseys being like on the whole for All-Star things, is that recently they kind of got away from having solid torso colors, like too many bands and too many stripes in random ass places. So it's really nice for them to kind of go with a very simple look here. I think the Atlantic one looks the coolest just because blue, silver, and yellow is, you know, I think it looks pretty clean. I think the Pacific Division one and the Central Division one kind of harkens back to those Wales and Campbell Conference ones that I was talking about from the 80s. And then, I mean, the Metro, I think, is just kind of a phone-in. You know, it's just silver, gray, yellow, and black. It's just, it's in the words of Andy Dwyer, it's just not good.
Yeah, I think the Metro one is definitely the worst. I think the gray and the yellow do not go together for me. Yeah. I think I like the Atlantic the best, just because I really like that color blue normally. And I think the blue and the yellow make sense there. I'm not really sure what they're doing with whatever it looks like, maybe like grayish or something on the sleeves. I'm not really sure what they're doing there. I think the main color choice is okay. The ones out west, I think, are better. I think they're both better, definitely, than the Metro one. And, you know, I kind of like how they are, not exactly, but they're kind of close to reverse, you know. You know, they both have the orange, you know, one's black, one's white, but they both have the orange, you know, the same color orange. So they're not like a reverse image of each other, but, you know, they're definitely connected to each other. I think they worked. I think they work together better as a pair than the Atlantic and the Metro do. And again, it's because of that gray. Like, I think if you make that gray white, I think it would probably look a lot better.
Yeah. But or I think, red, right? Like, isn't, like, it's the Metro, right? So that's what you've got. You've got the Capitals. They're red. You've got the. You know, are the Hurricanes in that division? Either way, you have options. You have options for red.
Here's the thing that I think is strange is as long as they're doing it the same way that they've done before, there would be a chance that the Pacific and the Metro can play in the final, right? So you're going to have white versus gray. That's going to be really hard to tell the difference. That's going to be like on NHL 18 where the guy hits select before you can change your uniform. And you're both playing with the home, you know, or you're both playing with the away whites or the home, and it's the same color, and you're like, oh, this is terrible. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we still got time. We could talk more about the actual All-Star game on the next episode, because we'll still have time before it happens. Hey, it's Peter. Just real quick before we play you this interview with Steph Driver, we had some technical difficulties with Skype, and the interview came out fine. I was able to go through and edit it from the individual audio files, but there were some times where Steph would be talking and Jay and I wouldn't be able to hear her for a while, and then the audio would kind of catch up. So there's a couple times in there where it sounds like Jay and I should be either reacting or like she's kind of waiting for us to say something. It's only a couple times, but just in case if you hear that, we are not being rude. We were just waiting to hear what she had to say. So hope you enjoy it. It was a lot of fun. And here's the interview with Steph. Joining us today is Steph Driver. She is the site manager for Broad Street Hockey. She's also the executive producer and host of Broad Street Hockey Radio and Yell About Sports. And you can find her on Twitter at StephaliciousD if you want a taste of what she's got. So, Steph, how you doing today? Thanks for coming.
I'm fantastic. How you doing?
Okay, I'm doing great. So we're going to start off with just some basic Flyer stuff. So I know this might be hard to answer in such a short period of time as a half hour, but what's going on in Flyer land? How are the fans feeling? It's probably a dangerous question to ask.
Yeah, because there's not really one answer. So this team is so wildly inconsistent. Everyone's feeling really, really good right now because they just crushed the Blues yesterday. But then they'll probably lose to Buffalo this afternoon because there's no rhyme or reason. You don't know which Flyers team you're going to get Brian Elliott is going on 17 straight starts. And management is making really questionable decisions that are working right now. And it's just so confusing. I don't understand what this team is doing and how they're doing it. But right now, this second, it's okay.
Well, that's good. It's always tough to try and, you know, encapsulate. I mean, at this point, I think it'd be really neat if we could run down all 30 teams and then just like summarize what's going on with a GIF. I think the Red Wings, it's like, yeah, it's a truck. It's on fire, but it's a moving truck. So that's fun. I wanted to talk about your ability to have every Shen on the planet. Can you speak a little bit about the cloning farm that you guys use to manufacture Braden Shens at above rate? I mean, like the Shen market is like highly saturated right now. So I think you've done a good job like not producing them, but could you have more Shens? Are you planning on having more Shens?
I want all of the Shens, every single one of them, and they all have to be on the team at the same time. You can't just go trading one of them and then expect the other one to be okay. You've got to get rid of both or keep them. That's just how it goes. So we played Braden Shen yesterday. So that was Saturday afternoon. They were saying on the broadcast it was like having a boy band back in town, like it because everybody loves this guy, and the love for Luke Shen wasn't quite as strong as it was for Braden, probably because we didn't have Luke as long and we traded JVR for him, so that came with a lot of really negative feelings towards Luke Shen. But Braden Shen really had the start to his career here, even though we got him from LA. He was pretty much a Flyer forever as far as we were concerned. I've never seen a player that elicits such an emotional response from everybody. So it's either you love the guy or you hate the guy, but then you have to justify why. And it was crazy seeing that yesterday because he's not on the team anymore. He's with St. Louis. However, there are still people screaming about how inconsistent he is and how he doesn't produce and how he's only getting points because of Tarasenko and Schwartz, and now Schwartz isn't around. So he's just flailing. And it's crazy to me how people can look at a solid 50-plus point per year player and just say that he doesn't produce.
Well, I mean, fans are pretty good at justifying their predetermined opinions with whatever facts are available.
Yeah, even if they're just made up.
So speaking of that, the last few episodes, Jay and I have spent probably a good total of maybe at least a half hour talking about the Department of Player Safety. So because I don't want to do another segment on, you know, the rest of our podcast, since you have a little bit of experience with a certain player, I'm just going to ask you. So why is Ronaldo?
Oh, God. I don't know. The easy answer is Peter Laviolette lost his mind. And that's why the league has a Zach Ronaldo. That's Peter Laviolette decided during the playoffs that was a good time to have Ronaldo have his NHL debut, and now the Flyers are responsible for this entity. I don't even know if I could call him a player. It's we've done, as Flyers fans, we've run the entire range of opinions and emotions about Zach Ronaldo, from this guy doesn't belong in the league, get rid of him, to, well, he's turning around and maybe he can be an effective player. And at this point, it's been so many years. He's been suspended so many times. There have been so many incidents that it's time. He brings nothing to the table, and it's time that the league recognizes that and that GMs start recognizing that.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And I mean, I try not to speak for Jay, but, you know, based on our our hours of talk about this, I think he agrees as well. So I wanted to tie it back to the Flyers because obviously Ronaldo is not currently a Flyer. Do you think that with the history of the Flyers, you know, the Broad Street Bullies and you know, having kind of that mindset around the team back in the day, do you think that makes it harder for people like you as Flyers fans today to try to maybe shake some of the old school mindset?
Yes. Oh my God, yes. And right now the team isn't doing us any favors. So just this past week, they called up a 2012 third round pick who he himself said he played like Zach Ronaldo. They decided that it was time to call him up to the NHL. So he spent, his name is Tyrell Goldborn. He spent the majority of last season with the Reading Royals in the ECHL. And this was a good time to insert some energy and some grit and some toughness into the lineup. And he had his NHL debut yesterday. On his first shift, he laid a big hit, and Scott Laughton scored a goal because of the hit that Goldborn laid down. So he's just not going to come out of our lineup for the next 4 years. This is just how it goes now. Yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy when your team and the Flyers this year have been, they've lacked a lot of fight back, and they've lacked really any type of toughness, which is okay when you're a highly skilled team and you don't really need to fight the battles, but they are not that either. So it's really hard when you're known as the Broad Street Bullies to quiet the very, very loud section of fans who are screaming for fights and who are saying that they need to bring up a goon, and they say that affectionately, like, it's time for our goon. You know, I don't know what Jay Rosehill is up to these days. I actually do, so that's, I shouldn't say that. I know that Jay Rosehill is playing over in Europe, but he might end up in orange and black again, because it's, I don't know what management is doing, but it worked yesterday, so they're just going to keep doing it until it doesn't, and then they're going to keep doing it for another year and a half.
Well, it's nice that if Goldborn is going to be this a beast for the Broad Street, I will take credit for already coming up with his nickname, a Goonborn. Is that?
I'm into it.
Okay, cool. So speaking of cool last names that start with the letter G, what do I got to do to get Ghost Bear from you? What's the asking price on your buddy Gustus Be Here?
Oh well, right now I am actively wearing, this is a Gustus Bear shirt. So you're gonna have to kill me. Sorry, over my dead body.
I knew the price was steep, but I think with further talks, you know, maybe, you know, we'll just table stuff for now, and then, you know, after the all right. All star break, we'll regroup and see what's what.
Yeah, I love Shane Gostis Bear on multiple different fronts. So just the player, obviously. But then also on a personal level, like, I know him and his family, they're all the nicest people I've ever met in my life, like, just the nicest people. And then he's got the Ghost Bear Foundation, which helps underprivileged kids. And then also, because he isn't perfect enough, helps rescue and support animals. So the animal shelters in Philadelphia. So... as a player, though, he is everything that I've needed him to be and more. And I don't think that Dave Haxtell, who's our coach, really appreciates his skill set, even though this year is not going as poorly as last year did in terms of their relationship. Ghost hasn't been scratched at all this season, which is good. There is another rookie defenseman that they are scratching for being skilled, but that's, you know, that's another conversation. But no, Ghost is having a really strong, if you could call it a bounce back season, I would. But that's, I think that's underestimating how good he was last season.
This is kind of a random observation, but, like, I'm I'm glad that we can, first of all, have this conversation today, because at first, because it actually grounds me back in the year 2017, because there are these random moments where I look at the Flyers team and I see players with names that resemble previous players, and I forget what year it is routinely. Like, oh yeah, they're goalie Lawton. You mean Layton? Oh, they're their goalie Hextall? No, that's their coach, Hextall. Like,
Hextall's our GM, so it's close enough.
Well, yeah, coach, GM, it's whatever, it's here or there.
I'm pretty convinced that Ron Hextall was like, I just need to find someone whose name is most similar to mine and kind of looks like me, and that's going to be our coach.
Yeah, I think
it's going to be the My Cousin Vinny defense. It's not Joey Gallo, it's Joey Callow. It's not Ron Hextall, it's Ron Hackstall. And then just the entire news media is going to be like, who do we pin this on? Just put it there. Just put it on the Hex one. We'll see what happens.
Well, it's really easy for you guys when your roster has been the same for the past 10 years.
Ooh.
Sorry.
Ooh, man. Sorry. It's okay.
I'm sorry. My team is really bad. Jokes are all I have.
No, it's okay, because I was trying to think of a question for this, but I'm just going to kind of make it as an observation before I jump into a question. I was looking at the standings, and I find it interesting that the entire Metro Division is ahead of all but three teams in the Atlantic. So that's cool. I was trying to think of a question.
Yeah, it's hell on earth.
I don't really have a question for that, but I guess I wanted to take a look into the mailbag that we have. We had a question from Rarpar, and there's two questions. The first one's kind of a joke, I think. But you know, how can we buy the Flyers luck and secure a top three overall pick? But then the other one is, do you think that Nolan Patrick needed more time at a lower level, or is he not getting enough ice time? How do you think he's adapting to the NHL?
That's a great question. I can talk about Nolan Patrick all day. But I mean, the first part is, I don't know who did the voodoo magic for Philadelphia to get the number two overall pick. I have no idea how that happened and whose soul was sold other than all of ours. So I'm not really expecting much from the next probably 5 years in terms of luck for this team. So if you want it, you can have it.
Yeah.
So Nolan Patrick is kind of dividing the fan base right now, because there's half that says he's underperforming and should go back to juniors. And there's another half that says, no, he's fine where he is. Just let him find his game. And I'm in the latter half. So he's coming off two sports hernia surgeries and went through most of last year with the second sports hernia undiagnosed. You know, this we did know before. So Ron Hextall did know before he drafted him that he was going to need another sports hernia surgery. But we didn't as fans. So I think that immediately after he was drafted and it was announced that he was going in for the surgery, people started to get really iffy and started to question this pick right from the get-go. Calling him injury prone and the whole thing, when really it was the lack of I've got a lot to say about the Brandon Wheat Kings medical staff for not picking this up, but let's just say it was undiagnosed. So he had the surgery right before the season started, and he missed a good amount of training camp. He missed rookie camp completely. So his conditioning wasn't a game speed. He came in preseason, was flying all over the place. He had a decent start to the season, and then he got a concussion and missed a handful of games after that. And when he came back, he just wasn't quite the same. He's been slow. He doesn't have a whole lot of points in general, even with missing, I don't remember exactly how many games it was, but it was a significant amount of games. He's just really not living up to what people believe the number two overall pick should look like in their first year in the NHL. Now, I personally think we'll see the real Nolan Patrick next year. I think that if anything, he came back from the surgery too fast. I think that he's still trying to get his legs under him. I know that we're in January now, so the season's half over, but I think that it's been a conditioning thing. And I think that next year will be a better indicator of what type of talent we have there. Everybody develops at their own pace. I would never send him down to Brandon, if for no other reason than I don't trust their trainers and their medical staff. I think that he needs to be in the NHL with NHL trainers, but he needs to play. That's what Nolan Patrick needs more than anything else, is he needs to play. If he were AHL eligible, I'd be pretty content with him in the AHL, but that stupid age rule where they can't play if they're under 20, is what's holding him back. He just needs to play. And bringing it full circle, Dave Haxtell is an idiot who only plays him 7 minutes a night with just terrible line mates. It's gotten better in the last week, but he's been playing with Dale Weiss, and on his other wing, it's been a mix of Wayne Simmonds and Travis Konechny, so it's been okay. But recently he's been playing with Raffel and Voracek. I would have liked for them to get a longer look, but he'll be fine. He'll be fine probably next year.
I mean, you clearly need more Shens.
That's what we need. Well, yes and no. So Shen is having the success that he's having in St. Louis right now because he's playing center, and I don't want Nolan Patrick at wing. So I need him at center. But maybe if Nolan Patrick was 3C and Braden Shen was 2C and Sean Couturier was 1C, like, I wouldn't be upset. That'd be a good team for me.
Well, I'm glad you're shedding light on this, because I'm trying to, Pete, feel free to jump in and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's refreshing to hear the insight from a team that drafts a high player and does this weird thing called play them in the NHL very soon. Because, I've been dealing with a system that's like, hey, we drafted this guy, might see him in 4 years. So it's kind of nice to try and see that, like, oh, it's just be, that it's not one way is very struggling. And then, another way, it's like, yeah, we drafted him high. But, like, here are the perils or the, the challenges as well with playing him so early.
We have a lot of that too. Don't worry. It's not just you guys.
Well, yeah, but just in terms of like you actually getting like this top three pick. I mean, I'm firmly in the camp that like I understand like if you're drafting, pick 20 and up. Yes, of course, these are guys that need work. But like I feel like if you're getting a pick that's in the top 10 or at least let's just be for the sake of argument top 5, like. If you're looking for immediate impact, if you're looking for a spark, because I feel like right now a lot of the creativity is being coached out of a lot of the players and they're being fed a system that doesn't play well to their strengths because, teams are just so concerned about either falling behind too early, da-da-da. So, like, I feel like with Patrick, I'm 100% with you. Like, if he's up, play him, right? Like, just, mm-hmm. like, there's no reason, like, he's not making you any more fan points just by sitting there. Like, the whole reason you got him is because you wanted another exciting or impact player. And if he's not going to play, then, obviously he's then taking up someone else's spot who actually does want to play. So it's nice to see that, these problems of, oh, yeah, we put guys in a Grand Rapids oven for 5 years and then hopefully there's a souffle that's perfectly baked at the end. And then, oh, look, it collapsed 2 years ago, but we didn't look in the oven. So, it's a little tough there.
I think I saw that episode of MasterChef. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The guy lifted the secret ingredient thing. He's like, today's secret ingredient is qualifying offer. Right. So, Steph, I will proudly wave the flag of being the Jersey nut in this wonderful podcast called For Sure, and I wanted to firstly say, and this is in every way meant to build points with you, because I actually prefer you over the other team that happens to live in the same state.
Well, good, me too.
So one of our mailbag questions is actually really one of the most complicated we've received. It's, do you think the Flyers have the best jersey in hockey?
No. No. And I'm going to say that about the current jersey. The alternate that we had for the Winter Classic, Jesus, like 5 years ago. I was actually looking around my room when you mentioned it. I thought I had it in front of me, but I don't. That was probably the best jersey that the Flyers have ever had. And if you want to put that in a Hall of Fame, like, I'd probably put it top five. Best jersey in hockey right now. God, you know who I love? I love the Avalanche jerseys. Is that weird?
Well, like, so. You mean the one with the, is it the C? Or just like what they look like just currently?
Oh, no, the one with the C.
Oh, yeah.
I should probably do current, right?
Well, I mean, and as a Wings fan, I know I might and will grab some guff for it. I will admit that their look has improved over the years. I mean, may that team burn on the mountainside forever and ever, and amen. But it is nice that they can look good while being a hated team. That actually almost gives that rivalry a little bit more. I know it's a joke to call it a rivalry still because it's been 10 years, but it's whatever. It is nice to look sharp while being a hated rival. You know, like if you're gonna play them, be like, ooh, I hate these guys. Oh, wait a minute. They got a new suit. Screw those guys. So that's nice. I will admit, I think you're... See, and this is where I like to split hairs with this type of thing, because I think the Flyers logo is consistently among the sharpest, but I do share a bit of your frustration with what they partner it with, because I think there was that 1 year... a while back where it was like three different kinds they pushed out, and it's like, okay, are we including the color black? We're not? Okay, we're going back to just white and orange. Oh, okay, we're having black again. Okay, and around the neck? What is happening here? All right, just go back to the 70s. Go back to the 70s, please.
Oh, sorry, I never know when Jay's gonna stop.
What was that?
I never know when Jay's going to stop ranting about jerseys. So that's why there's a little bit of a pause there, because I wasn't sure if he was done. But I wanted to ask you about one of the players wearing the jerseys. Oh, take that, John Keating, with your transitions. Claude Giroux is over a point a game. He has 51 points in 41 games played. I remember, I know one of the rules of fantasy hockey is nobody gives a crap about your fantasy hockey team, but I did have him a few years ago.
Oh, my God. Everybody cares about my fantasy hockey team. Can we do this for the next hour?
Okay, we're going to extend this for a half hour, another half hour. So
perfect.
You're on with Fantasy Hockey with Steph. No, but so I had him on my team, I don't know, a few years back. And then eventually I traded him because I thought, I was like, okay, it looks like, I don't know, whatever, like the bloom is off the rose, like he's on the downward slope. And so what has happened, you know, either that he's done or that the team has done? Like, why is he producing so well this year when he's had some trouble recently?
They moved him to wing.
Oh, okay.
Is really what it was. And it's been an amazing experiment. Probably one of the only three things that Dave Hakstol has done well is to move Giroux to wing and have Couturier as the 1C. Turns out that the winger that Giroux has needed for his entire career was actually Claude Giroux.
Oh my God.
So it's been a delight to watch. And everybody here was really, really down on Claude Giroux coming out of last year, that he needed half the season to recover from, he had hip and abdominal surgery in the same off season. And it took a while for him to come back to full strength last season. But then we started to see a lot of improvement and results out of him in the second half. But at that point, the season was already lost because they're just not a good team. And this year, it's just been a breath of fresh air. Everyone was saying that he's on the decline and he's not going to produce and we need to trade him. The trade, do you guys have the same trade the superstars conversation every single day for the last entire lifetime?
That and should the Red Wings fire Ken Holland and should the Red Wings fire Jeff Blashill?
That's pretty much our entire
mailbag for WHIM Radio.
Wait, just a second. We have superstars?
Well, I mean, do we?
I think we're getting a little too generous with the use of superstars. I think the last true superstar we had was maybe Hossa, just because, like, that was, like, he's our most recent 40-goal scorer, and he was absolutely dynamite in the shootout, even though I hate the shootout forever, so... Yeah, that's funny. All right, sorry.
No, that's fine. I also wouldn't call Giroux a superstar, but he's as close as we're going to get in Philadelphia right now on the hockey team. But it's just constant calls for him to get traded, and it's slowed down a little bit because he's one of the only people scoring goals. And it's really awesome to see. And it's allowed for the offensive emergence of Sean Couturier, which many of us had given up on expecting from him. So he's always been, he just turned 25 too. So he's always been a really, really strong defensive forward, really strong at driving play and shutting down top lines of the opposing team. But the offense was never there. He had never scored. I think it was above 40 points in his career. He hit that yesterday, and it was the halfway point through the season. So moving him up to 1C and watching him produce and seeing Claude Giroux really just become rejuvenated in his career has been, once again, one of the only good things to come out of this season.
So see, there you go. So Claude Giroux, he looked down at the sand and he saw zero sets of footprints because he was carrying himself.
Uh-huh. You guys are pulling a lot of positivity out of me. It's uncomfortable.
Okay. So there you go. We should have weekly conversations and that way you'll stay motivated, stay positive. Yeah.
Well, it's funny you mention that stuff because our last questionnaire. I wanted to lead in with your. It's actually our new segment on our interviews with important hockey people. We have to read what their pinned tweet is, and so
oh good. And so
speaking of positivity, let's go to the board, folks. So when you visit Steph Driver's page, you will see oh so ceremoniously displayed for all to see. Just in case you didn't know what you're getting yourself into. Put this on my grave. All right, and it's a photo, and it says very, very simply, being a Philadelphia sports fan is a singular experience that brings together disappointment, despair, and desperation. So now that we've evened the scales in terms of positive versus negative, this actually is a lead into our perennial JJ question, which is, do you still like hockey in light of the fact that you now cover it for mostly now important job-like real reasons? Because we've talked to people who are like, yeah, you know, I really liked hockey, and then I started to learn about it, and I want to gouge my eyes out with a stick. But for the most part, everybody's like, it's a new appreciation, but we always still like to ask it and not just assume everybody's like, oh, yeah, I like hockey. And then after covering hockey, I like it even more. So I put it to you.
And you have to answer just like that in that tone of voice.
I don't know if I can. I don't think I'm creatively adept enough to do that. I have a really complicated relationship with hockey. I love the game. I love the game and I love watching hockey that does not include the Flyers. So I've got a complicated relationship with the Flyers in that I hate them and I hate that I love them. And I hate everything that they're doing, and I also hate that I can't stop. I just can't stop following them, and I couldn't stop covering them if I wanted to. Like the whole my pinned tweet, we can go back to that, put that on my grave. From the grave I will be tweeting about the Philadelphia Flyers. Is I can't stop. It's become a part of me, and I love hockey. I hate love the Flyers.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, listeners, boys and girls. Steph Driver was our guest today. She loves hockey and hate loves the Flyers. So hard to top that. Like I said before, you can find her on Twitter at StephFeliciousD. So thank you so much for coming on, Steph. We really appreciate it.
I had so much fun. Thank you, guys.
So following a fantastic interview with Steph Driver, I wanted to bring up another news of note. Pete, did you see that there are Olympics this year? It's kind of neat, huh?
Yeah, like, I heard about
like
that.
Like teams playing for their countries and all that stuff. Obviously, the big news about this time is that the National Hockey League will not be in attendance for these games, and I'm planting my flag firmly that I'm actually pretty okay with it. First of all, big shout out to Craig Custance and company for mock drafting what Team Canada and Team Sweden and Team USA might have looked like had they gone there. And I think it is safe to say that there is a fantastic crop of national talent that could have led to some pretty all-star teams. But you know what? We've had that the last like 15 years, Pete. Like we've had really, really awesome teams. And yes, they've gone on to win gold, and yes, they've gone on to medal and all that stuff. But from an American perspective, what? We silvered in 2002, and we have done very little since with really awesome talent. So I don't mean to go all Herb Brooksian, but I don't think they have enough talent to win on talent alone. And that's just you're putting a whole group of superstars together and expecting them to suddenly work together. It's a little rough. So Pete, what are your thoughts on, the teams that are going to be representing these countries are going to have zero NHLers on them?
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of two minds, and I don't want to just repeat what you said, but it's basically the same thing that it's always fun to watch, the best players, playing for your country. It's always interesting to have, the best players that your country could have. But at the same time, I mean, there is something to be said for, the way it used to be, when you had, the 1980 U.S. Olympic team, which featured some players that would go on to play in the NHL. And that was a little bit different too, because then you had, the Soviet team, had players that nowadays would have been in the NHL, like they had their top team, and we had, a bunch of college guys. So now it's a little bit, the playing field has been evened a little bit. You still have, I think, the U.S. team is definitely still going to be at a disadvantage, considering that you have, some of the other leagues like the KHL, players are going to be able to go. I think one thing that I think is interesting, I was looking at the rosters, and there is a player from my hometown who is going to be representing the United States. And I think that's pretty cool. It's if anybody cares, it's Mark Arcabello. He plays for Yale, or played for Yale. Oh, actually, yeah, he played for Yale because he's currently with SC Bern. I mean, that's kind of cool. So I got somebody from my hometown. I get to root them on. Hopefully they could, they can bring home a medal. And I guess we'll go from there. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. It's always folly to just assume that, hey, those superpowers and great hockey talent, that means they're going to automatically medal. I mean, I'm still waiting for the one year where, like Japan just like comes out of nowhere and just like sweeps everything. Like they just, they go undefeated because like it's going to happen, Pete, that the law of averages dictates that at least at one point, some random ass team is going to be shot from the woodwork to take everybody by surprise. We need a cool runnings, right? Mm-hmm. We need somebody to shake things up. So, and I think, again, the last time I saw that kind of happen was the year that, I don't know if maybe it wasn't, I think it was 06 in Torino where the Swiss had Mats Zuccarello and the Rangers signed him before the tournament was even done. Like they already offered him a contract and stuff. And so he's still playing today. So, you know, that's kind of the neat thing about what this tournament can offer as well is you have more of an opportunity to see players to play for their country and then, you know, potentially catch the eye of a GM here or there and maybe bring some of that unpredictable and explosive talent to your local team. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't know if Team USA has a lot of players like that, but there are certainly a lot of players out there, both on USA and other teams abroad, where I'm excited to see what they bring. And, you know, again, the time change is probably going to kill me, but, you know, hey, we're hockey fans. We're tough. We can stay up till hours and watch this stuff. So I'm for it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you said you're waiting for Japan. I'm waiting for Iceland to live up to the promise that they showed in the Junior Goodwill games. You know, I've been like, man, one of these years, Iceland is going to come out of nowhere. I mean, they just have so much talent, but, OJ, so
instead of winning it for their coach, they had to win it for themselves. I think they're still bent on winning it for not themselves.
So Jay, you wanted to take a moment to talk about a new Olympic logo.
Why, yes, I did, Peter. It's. I'm glad you brought that up, folks. As a graphic designer myself, I have been saddled many a time with working with clients who want something so bad, so ugly, simple that at the end of the day, yes, I'm paid to do a service, but at what cost, Peter? At what cost? So for those of you out there who aren't in the know, Russia was slammed with sanctions and other punishments regarding this year's Olympics in terms of their doping scandal. It's a long history of ridiculousness, Peter. I'm sure we could record a completely separate podcast about just how redonkulous that scandal is, but let's just skip to the end part where it's Russia is basically very minimally being represented in terms of look and style and presence at the Olympics. I mean, Russian players will still be there, but they have to wear, Peter, they have to wear this logo. Oh, my God. Like, I am quite certain that if someone wanted to, they could make this logo be just a default logo. It's the most default logo in the history of sports. Like, I don't know, to call it one of the logos you can pick in like a sports franchise video game is an insult to all of the other generic logos that exist for you to pick from. So Pete, I'm bursting at the seams with frustration. So I need you to describe this so I don't scream for the next 10 minutes.
Okay. So first of all, I think I'm going to make this the cover image of the podcast. If you go to the Wingin' It Motown site, just so that's the easiest way you can do it. But if you Google, the easiest way to get this to come up is if you Google Olympic athlete from Russia logo. And if you do that, you have put nearly as much work into it as the designer of the logo did, because basically what they've done is they've opened up, I don't even want to say Photoshop. I don't know. Is there something before MS Paint? Is there something more? I mean, is there like a Minecraft version? Like maybe they opened up Minesweeper and used that to spell this out. I don't know exactly what they did, but it is basically a white circle with Olympic athlete from Russia in red capital letters all the way around the outside of the circle. Like, it is a circle of letters, and it's hard to read. I mean, like, the words are close together, so it's kind of hard to tell where one word ends and the other begins. So it's kind of the Ouroboros of logos, which the snake the snake eating its own tail of logos. Because depending on where you start, I mean, it's like from Russia Olympic athlete, Russia Olympic athlete from, you know, and then you could even start combining, you know, words. And I mean, the way it's written, it would be kind of hard for me to do that on the fly. But I mean,
it's ludicrous, Pete.
You know what I just thought of? I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to Photoshop this into the Olympic logo as the red ring. Like, I'm gonna have to take out the red ring and then put this in as the red ring. I'm gonna have to do that after I finish editing the podcast, or maybe we're just gonna stop and I'm gonna do it now. But so, to be honest, like, no matter what, we have gotten some great joy out of the Olympics already before the opening ceremonies, before it's even started, before with the strange interpretive dance routines that you will definitely have. We have gotten some joy from the pure horrificness, the pure abominable nature of this logo.
Yeah, before the puck is even dropped, we have joy. So, and what's funny, Pete, is this is now that I'm thinking about it, the Olympic Committee is just so savage in making them wear this. This is basically, I think, the first international dunce cap to have a country wear. Like, yeah, you get to skate, but you got to wear this funny bib the whole time.
I mean, I'm just kind of surprised that there isn't like a large syringe in the middle. You know, like a syringe and like a bottle of pills.
Well, yeah, it's basically those photos that people do with their pets of like, I'm the dog. I tore up the couch today and I am just a bad boy. Like, that's basically what this logo is meant for.
Yeah.
For Russia. So,
or I like, mean, like another thing is it could say in the middle, you know what you did.
Or just, I'm from Russia and I know what I did.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
So like I said, as long as I can make it work, I'm going to put it as the logo of this podcast. But if you can't see it for whatever reason, then go on the internet. You can find it pretty easily. So before we close out this episode of For Sure, we have one last segment. So this is a fan favorite from a couple episodes ago. We're bringing it back. This is called Cross Checks.
Let's do it.
As you can see, we spent a lot of money and we have a new new opening stinger for it. All right. So, Jay, pulling on beards in a fight.
Don't grow them. Peter, not allowing fans to see vote totals for the All-Star captains.
Dumb. Jay, Vegas is still a good team.
Why? Pete, Sweden's captain throwing the silver medal into the crowd at the World Juniors.
Could not care less.
Yeah, I mean, you cannot care. I mean, I care. I think this is a neat transformative moment for not only the player, but maybe for fans as a whole, because maybe it's time that we did get a little wise to the act of, hey, you're competing for something. And, you know, that it reminds me of one of my all-time favorite Seinfeld jokes about the gold, silver, and bronze scheme, which is, it's like, gold, you win. Yeah, we're number one. Bronze, at least you got something. But silver is like the ultimate insult. Congratulations, you're the number one loser. No one lost ahead of you. And
you're the last team to lose.
And that's basically what that represents. I mean, it's so tough to be in that. Yes, at the end of the day, it's still a great honor. You played your heart out. You got to the championship game, da da da. But from a competitor, from a hardcore competitive standpoint, I totally see where the Swede captain is coming from. You put all that effort in, and then you basically get like it's like the most famous participation trophy, right? Like, you'd like to think that maybe bronze is that, but no. Bronze is like the, hey, man, like, we're on the up and up. Gold, you're at the top of your game. Silver, it's like you did some things right. You did some things wrong. And that's it. It's not like giving you any encouragement either way. It's like either suck more or be better. That's exactly what the silver medal represents. So I'm actually totally cool with it. I think it's neat. I'd like to think that it's a neat fire up moment. I mean, it'd be cooler if the entire team did it. And then all of a sudden all of Team Sweden is being arrested for assault and battery because they're just chucking all these silver medals at unsuspecting fans. So that would be actually kind of neat. You know, we've seen all those times where they do the teddy bear toss thing, like, I'd love to be able to bounce my great grandchildren on my knee and be like, "Hey, remember back in 2018 at the World Juniors? Oh yes. Yes, we saw 18 silver medals flung into the crowd. A lot of people died. It was great."
I think for me, like I said, I don't really care about the actual event of it. Like, I don't really care that it happened. Like, it doesn't really make me think one way or the other about this player or anything like that. But what I find interesting is the response. I think the response is far more interesting than everything else, because I mean, you have just number one, just like complete rank hypocrisy. You have all these people that are talking about how, you know, millennials always get participation trophies. And then you have a young kid who's not even a millennial. He's like, whatever the next thing is.
Yeah.
Saying, "I don't care about this participation trophy." And they're like, "Bad, you're bad." It's like what do you want him to do? Like pick a side. And the other thing too is the people who are saying like, "I don't want him on my team. I don't want a sore loser like that on my team." Like, he's 19 years old. This is like the biggest game he's ever played in. It just ended and he lost, and he's not like in his right mind. You know, I mean, I don't know. Like people just, I don't understand people getting, you know, judging this kid for, I don't want him on my team. He's too soft. He can't handle pressure. He's like, give him a break. I mean, you know, you have many, many instances of people losing a Stanley Cup overtime final game and openly weeping. You know, like, they, you know, they lost the cup and they're crying. And like, I mean, what are you going to make fun of them too? You know, I mean, like, they're emotional. Like, it's not like he came back the next day and it's like, you know, I've had some time to sit and ponder what this medal means to me, and I've decided I'm going to throw it away. You know, it was like a rash, impulsive decision made by a you know, yes, an adult. He's 19, but I mean, under tremendous pressure. You know, he has a lot of pressure on him from, you know, to win for his country. And like I said, I don't take anything from it. I don't think it says anything about him as a person, anything about him as a future, you know, potential NHL player. I think for me, that was the annoying thing. Wasn't that he did it? It was the reaction to it.
That's fair. I mean, again, I am of the mind that I think it's a neat interpretive way to be like, boys, silver's not good enough, right? And I think that, what, if he took the medal and then was standing there wearing it and then said that, yeah, I'm sure people would probably laud him as a better soundbite. But, like, I don't know. For me, like, if I was on the team and I saw my captain do that and doing it as a statement of, like, you know, maybe we've been settling for silver for too long, right? Like, you know, if there's a different way to go about it, then yeah, of course there is. But I'm I don't know. I love that he did that. But I don't know. That might be the old time sports curmudgeon in me that's like, yeah, don't take no guff. And whatnot, but, like, you're right. I think people's reaction to it were far more ludicrous. I mean, yeah, we can argue whether or not, you know, it's a form of disrespect or whatnot, but, like, listen, first of all, like, oh, I don't want him on my team. Like, well, why not? Not every game has a silver medal for it. Like, oh, you're scared that every game he'd play, he'd find something to throw into the crowd because they didn't win? I mean, that's an awful large, gargantuan stretch to make. Yeah. So it's... people need to be better at interpreting it. And, you know, if he comes out and says, like, hey, I really just don't want a silver medal, and by giving it to somebody to signify, and it's super amazing that it was landed to the guy who was wearing three jerseys, you know, like, I like how we're so focused on, oh, he threw a silver medal, and not the, this guy was an equal opportunity bandwagoner. Yeah. He came prepared. Where are the think pieces on this guy?
Yeah.
He got a silver medal for not making a decision.
Yeah.
Where's the uproar about that? So I think, again, we're burying the lead. That's all this is.
And then I think Greg Wyshynski got mad at him on Twitter because he was also wearing a Flyers jersey.
Probably.
Inside joke for people that follow Greg Wyshynski on hockey Twitter.
Yeah.
All right, so that's another episode of For Sure. All we have left is for our last segment, as always, which is our Doc Emmerich word of the bye week, I guess. So, Jay, what do you got for us this time?
This one's short and sweet. We really chipped this one in here. It's the new year. It's time to get saucy. Time to get a little bit more bangarang out of our verbs here. So we, and he chips it along. Hossa scores. Oh my, he's not even playing. Oh my.
All right. So thank you so much for listening. It's our first show of the new year. We'll have hopefully 25 more of them for 2018. Hopefully if the world doesn't end. So so thanks a lot. You can follow me on Twitter at PFlynnHockey. You can follow Jay at @TheRoar_24. And you can follow our podcast at 200FootPod. That's 200FTPOD. Thanks a lot for listening, and come back in 2 weeks.
Please.
For sure.
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 For sure.